Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Captain Chris Karam. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I am doing great. It's nice to have you on the show.
Nice to be here, finally, after listening for all these months and years.
The episode we're here to talk about is, of course, Season 3, Episode 17, The Consultant. It aired on January 21st, 1975. Before we get to that episode, Chris, of course, this is your first time on the show. I have to ask you, like, how did you become a fan of MASH?
Well, I started watching it in the summer of 1981. The show had been in syndication for a couple of years at that point, and I literally remember it as being, I think I'm going to give this show a try. Well, I'm glad I did. Because not only did I really like the show, I really liked the show. And it was the great thing about when a show is in syndication is you can get caught up fairly quickly
right.
on the backlog of episodes. In fact, I know when I started watching it, I think they were showing some of the later seasons up to that point with BJ and Charles. But then shortly afterwards, they showed the pilot, and I got to see it from the beginning. And it was interesting to see how the show evolved as the years went along. And I quickly became a fan and ended up watching the last two seasons of the show first run. So that was great.
Right. I mean, that's pretty much how I handled it, too. So what was it? I mean, you were a kid back then. So what was it about that appealed to you so much?
Probably the fact that Hawkeye and Trapper, or Hawkeye and BJ, were wise asses. just the fact that they were thumbing their noses at the system. They were anti-authority. And, of course, they got involved in a lot of escapades and shenanigans. And, sometimes they would be put upon by Frank Burns or whoever. But in the end, they generally emerge triumphant and, right one out over wrong. Or, in their case, they got what they wanted.
Right. Yeah, the show has a very kid-like appeal in that regard. Again, when you on the surface, you wouldn't think it would be a show that kids would like because it's got such heavy subject matter and it's set in the past. But yet, it has that eternal sort of like snobs versus slobs kind of thing, which is like like Animal House. I mean, I love that when I was a kid. And Stripes, it's that kind of thing. So I mean, it really does have that. It's got a lot more to it than that, but it does have that kernel, kernel of sort of like rebelling against authority. And when you're a kid, I mean, what 10-year-old wouldn't want to be as witty as Hawkeye and get away with the shit that he got away with?
Right. And I was like 14 turning on 15. So I was even further along. And I was a teenager at that point. And of course, when you're a teenager, you want to rebel. I mean, I wasn't like Hawkeye and Trapper. I didn't do stuff like they did. But, your parents, you think you know better than your parents. And, you see authority figures being kind of dorks. And, and of course, the show appeals to me. But what's interesting is that as I've watched the show in like the 40 years since or whatever, there are certain things that I understand a lot better now.
Sure, yeah.
About that show. There's little things that were either I didn't get or might have been just too subtle for me make a lot more sense to me now.
How do you watch it now? Do you watch it sort of regularly or every so often?
It's funny. I have the complete DVD set. Of course, I was one of the stupid ones who bought them as they went along. And then, then when they were finished, they put them all in a box set for a lot cheaper and they had bonus material. But yeah, it's funny. Like I watch it on DVD. But if sometimes there's a channel called MeTV.
Yes. Oh, sure.
And they show the reruns and sometimes I'll watch those. But sometimes I go for periods where I don't watch it. Sometimes I need to sort of not watch it for a while. But I inevitably go back to it at some point.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I go through the – if I wasn't doing the podcast, I would probably have that kind of wave where I would let it sit for a while and then go back to it. It's funny you mentioned about the syndication where it would start over. Yep. I can remember watching it in syndication and most – well, I shouldn't say most. I really don't remember. But there were times where they would get to the As Time Goes By, which is the last episode in the syndication. Some syndication packages had the final episode and they would break it up into – smaller half-hour shows, yeah.
I've never seen that.
Right. Most didn't. But I have heard stories that some syndication packages did have it. But most of the time, it ended with As Time Goes By. And then, of course, they would start over. And sometimes, you know, in a lot of markets, MASH aired twice a day. You just mentioned MeTV. It airs on MeTV twice a day.
Right.
And they would air, as time goes by, would be the second show of the hour, and then the pilot would start the next day. But once in a while, it would fall the other way, where as time goes by would be the first half of the hour, and then they would jump right to the pilot. And it was so weird to be like, whoa, oh, we've just shaken the Etch-A-Sets and completely started over to have them back-to-back like that. It was very informative to see, like, wow, this seems like a completely different show. Well, they've gone this far in 11 years.
Well, speaking of that, a friend of mine, and she's in her early 30s, she kind of grew up watching the reruns. And she said at one point, I was really confused because, you know, the differences of the different eras with Colonel Potter and Colonel Blake. And she ended up, as a result of that, buying the DVD box set so she could watch them all in sequence. Mm-hmm. And she became a huge fan.
Okay. Yeah. It's the syndicators just didn't care about that stuff for the most part. So, yeah.
And MASH wasn't one of those shows like we have now where they're serialized.
Right, right.
We have story arcs that play out over an entire season. So you can kind of get away with showing MASH out of sequence for the most
part. For the most part, there's bits and, little bits here and there that probably don't line up. But generally, these are all sort of one and done. So, well, outstanding. That's great. I said it's
actually,
syndication was such a huge thing for so many people of a certain generation of that's how you caught up on the show. I mean, it's basically streaming now. That's how it works with streaming is that you get, I heard the show is really good. Oh, let me catch up and watch it all. And now I can watch the new ones. I did that with Breaking Bad.
Right. Especially in the pre-cable era.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like you said, it's not like now where you can go online, you can stream, you have on demand. You had to watch stuff when it aired back then. And if you don't mind, do you mind if I share a little story about the finale or?
No, go right ahead.
Okay. By the time the series finale aired in February of 83, I had a part-time job after school. I was in high school and I worked nights and afternoons. It kind of varied. I actually remember putting in for that night, for that day off. Because there was no way in hell I was going to miss the final episode of MASH. And we didn't have a VCR. And this was back, if you missed something, you missed it.
It's gone, yeah.
And the next day, I was in high school as a junior. And I was in a creative writing class. And the guy who taught it was the head of the English department. I'm not kidding you. We spent the first 10 minutes of the class talking about MASH. You were just kind of like, oh, man, wasn't this, you know, and it was just, and I'll never forget it. Like, here I am in school, supposed to be learning something, and I'm spending, it's like me and you, we're just talking about MASH and how much we loved that final episode and what it meant to us.
That's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah.
It was, you know, hey, it was a cultural moment that we kind of don't have anymore because everything is so broken up and stratified. But it was that. I have to wonder who didn't get off from your job if you were asked. If you asked off, who got stuck working?
I don't know, and I don't care. I mean, I was a part timer. I'm sure they had someone else who could take over. I mean, the funny thing was, it wasn't like I worked every Monday night. I mean, I might have had it off anyway, but I didn't want to take a chance.
Understandable. I actually, in a reverse, I used to, back when I worked retail, I would always volunteer to work the Super Bowl because I just didn't care about the Super Bowl and everyone else did. And I was like, I'll work the Super Bowl. And because it was great because depending on the job, you got extra time. Like sometimes you got time and a half because it was a day everybody wanted off and nobody was in the store. So it's perfect. Yeah. I didn't have to do anything.
So you're one of the other 10 people like me who don't care about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't care. So I was always willing to work it, and everyone else wanted it. I'm like, great, I'll just be here. Just cool, just reading stuff or whatever. So
sure.
It's fantastic. So yeah, and again, for younger people, can't imagine a lifetime where when TV aired, you had to watch it, or that was it. It was gone forever, presumably. So.
Right, or you had to hope that during the summer rerun season, they might show that episode.
Right, right.
But that was not guaranteed, because the summer reruns were never shown in the same sequence. It was just, okay, this week we're going to show this episode, and maybe next week we'll show that episode.
Right, right. And for many years, MASH was not available on home video in anywhere, except for the last episode. They actually put Goodbye for All and I'm In on VHS, and it was the only MASH episode available for many, many years. When I worked at the video store, I used to run it sometimes in the store because it was the only episode we had. We couldn't show the movie, but we could show the final episode at least. So, well, that's awesome. That's great. I love hearing all these stories of how people discover the show at different points in their life. So, as I mentioned, I said we're here to talk about episode 17, which is The Consultant. It was written by Robert Klein and Larry Gelbart, and it was directed by Gene Reynolds. Hawkeye and Trapper go to Seoul for a medical conference, and while they're there, they meet Major Anthony Borelli, played by Robert Alda, a doctor and veteran of two previous wars, who is acting as a medical consultant. They all hit it off, and Borelli is intrigued by the challenge that working at the 477th presents. Hawkeye invites him to come visit sometime. Later, Hawkeye and Trapper, back at the 477th, are shocked to see that Borelli has, in fact, come to visit. Everyone treats him like visiting royalty, and he's helpful in surgery when a mass of wounded arrive, even when bombs are going off right outside. Frank prepares to amputate a crushed leg, but Borelli says that it can be saved with an arterial transplant, something no one at the 477th has ever done. Frank is against it, of course, but Henry goes ahead, giving Radar the order to search other units for a usable transplant. They find one at a British unit, and Hawkeye and Trapper go get it. When they get back, Hawkeye is excited at the idea of trying this, even though Borelli will be the one doing the surgery. The only problem is, in the meantime, Borelli has gotten drunk. Hawkeye confronts him in the swamp, and Borelli explains that he had forgotten how unnerving being this close to the real war can be, and he can't handle it. He insists Hawkeye can do the surgery, even though he's never done it before. Hawkeye and Trapper perform the surgery, and it's a success. Later, Hawkeye berates Borelli for being drunk when he was needed. Borelli admits to that but doesn't try to excuse the behavior, but points out that Hawkeye's homemade still, what's that you're leaning on, Doctor, a bubblegum machine, and wishes him better luck on his third war. Later, everyone except Hawkeye wishes Borelli goodbye at the chopper pad, but at the last moment, Hawkeye shows up and tips his hat to the fellow doctor. All right, Chris, so overall, what are your thoughts on The Consultant?
Well, when you first gave me the choice of episodes, I picked this one, and I thought, oh, okay, that's a good episode. When I was watching it this morning, I was reminded of how good it really was. You know, I hadn't seen it in a while, and I watched it twice this morning. And this is a really good episode because not only is this my favorite era of MASH, but this is my favorite season of MASH. And this episode, I feel, really shows what MASH is about. You know, this show I found to be less jokey than some of the previous shows from, you know, seasons 1, 2, and 3. But they get some good gags in, but the show really kind of addresses the subject of this doctor who's been down the road before with this. And, you know, he's being confronted with Hawkeye, who's this young Turk, and he's kind of cocky. And I really feel that when the episode ends, you really are impacted by it. And that's what MASH really did for people like me, and most people watched it, you know, whether it be, you know, the very funny episode or an episode where, oh wow, you don't think about these kind of things, especially when you're younger.
Oh yeah, but I agree. I mean, yeah, this is definitely something. There's this wonderful tension here between the two Aldas about where, yeah, you're right. Hawkeye is a real guy, and it is sort of fun to watch. You realize this is father and son playing off each other, especially in that final moment, the final scene.
Right, and I'm closer now to Dr. Borelli's age. Probably, you know, I'm probably somewhere between Dr. Borelli and Hawkeye, but you know, some of the things he says in the episode I can relate to more than I could have related to, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I love it in that scene in the officers club where they're talking to Borelli, and Hawkeye, as you mentioned, he is kind of snotty, and he's like, you know, you want to get off the sidelines and be really helpful. You want to, you know, get in the game, come over to the 477th. And Borelli's like, I saw my fill of war in World War I and II. And it's like, yeah, this guy has done his bit, Hawkeye, yeah. You know, and luckily to Hawkeye's credit, he's like, fair enough. He realizes, yeah, this guy, come on. I mean, what, you know, this guy's really done a lot. And as you say, it's Hawkeye is very, very sort of snotty about it. And then you realize, yeah, well, you know, Borelli can't handle the pressure. Well, you know, the line that Borelli has, like, I wish you better luck on your third war.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Hawkeye, as much as I love Hawkeye as a character and Alan Alda as an actor, Hawkeye can be pretty full of himself sometimes.
Yes.
You know, he can be self-righteous. He can be cocky, snotty, like you said. You know, and it's kind of – this is one of the instances where he kind of gets his comeuppance. He's kind of put in his place by somebody who's got a lot more experience than him, who's seen a lot more, you know, action, so to speak, and – you know, plus it's, you know, in real life, it's his dad. And I definitely want to address that subject, that part about it as well as we, you know, go forward in this conversation.
Yeah, I should mention Robert Alda, for those of you who don't know, was a a lead actor and then kind of transitioned into character acting later on. He starred in films like Rhapsody in Blue, The Beast with Five Fingers, Cloak and Dagger with Gary Cooper. He was a regular on the show Super Train, which my pal and former MASHcast guest Dan Budnick is probably excited about. His last appearance was on the show Amanda's, which was starred B. Arthur. He died in 1986, and it's fun to see them together. I don't think they particularly look alike, so you don't really get it. I mean, I think you would have to know who Robert Alda is to know that they're father and son, but they have a wonderful rapport. I mean, so does Trapper too. I mean, the whole scene of them in the officers club is fantastic, the way they go back and forth, and I love that Borelli doesn't realize that they're officers because they're dressed in their fatigues and stuff.
Right, right, yeah.
He's like, we threw our bars when we came over the wall. Like, they immediately goes with the rhythm. As you said, this episode doesn't have a lot of laughs once you get to the second half, but the first half is very, very funny.
Well, not that this is related to anything, but I want to also mention that Robert Alda appeared in an episode of the late 70s Spider-Man TV show.
Yes, he did. That's right.
He was a villain. In fact, he was a bad guy. So it's I only threw that in there because this is the Fire and Water Podcast Network,
right, sure,
and you know it's relevant.
Yeah,
no, he was one of those character actors, especially like in the late 70s. You might see him on, like I said, Spider Man. You might see him on, I don't know, Love Boat.
You're right. If you go through actors that were working actively in the 70s, there's about a dozen shows that you see them all on. You know, it's like, oh, we did a Columbo, and I did a Love Boat, I did a Wonder Woman, anything that needed guest characters, you know, villains or something like that to come in, to rotate in. They could use these guys. So, yeah, it was fun. I mean, of course, Dr. Borelli would return on the show.
Yes.
Later, many, many seasons later, come back playing. And that we'll get to that, obviously, in the later seasons of MASHcast. This episode does open, though, with one of the more goofy sort of inconsistencies. And it's just – they just do it for a visual gag because it opens with Radar in a Jeep. And Henry's coming out of the office and he says, take me over to the swamp, and as if you need to drive to get to the swamp. And you can literally see the corner of the swamp in the frame. And then they do this cut of Radar driving. It looked like he's driven 2 miles away. You're like, guys, the swamp is about 10 feet away from the hospital. It's just a very, very silly joke that if you're paying close attention, you're like, wait, that doesn't make any sense, but what the hell? It's a funny gag because the whole bit is that Radar drives like a demon. Like, he drives too fast, and it's a neat visual gag, but it doesn't make a lick of sense.
And that leads to a great one-liner later on in that scene where Hawkeye says, my kidney's lawyer will call you in the morning.
I did notice, though, and they mentioned this on IMDb, that when Radar takes off, you hear screeching sounds, which you would not get when you're just driving on dirt. But, okay,
right.
You know, again, it's just it's all of a gag. I like, again, when Borelli does show up, I like that everyone treats him like I said, like visiting royalty. It's very, very sweet because they just respect him. And then Radar is very, very complimentary towards him. Another weird little hiccup in the continuity is we see in this episode that they have a pool at the 477th.
Yes.
Henry is there. It's a giant metal, some sort of barrel, but not a barrel. It's some sort of giant water containment thing. And they filled with water, and Henry's got his bathing cap on, and then Hawkeye and Trapper show up in it. Of course, in a later episode, they would make a big deal about the canvas pool that Hawkeye and BJ have, and they act like having a pool, having anything that can hold cool water is some sort of at a premium. It's like, what are you talking about? You have a giant pool right here at the 477th.
Well, the interesting thing is that I was watching that scene, and that water looks brown.
It doesn't look terribly clean, no.
Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, would you really want to be sitting in that, bathing in that, or, you know, marinating in that stew of whatever? And especially because there's a scene where Frank is finking on he's squealing on them, you know, Hawkeye and Trapper, about their antics in Tokyo. And at one point he just, you know, submerges himself underneath so he doesn't have to listen to Frank.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh, that water looked gross. And he didn't have, you know, like, he didn't have a mask on or a, like a scuba mask on or anything, or protective goggles. He just, you know, but it's so typical of how he felt about Frank. And, you know, you got to love McLean Stevenson.
Mm-hmm. The water doesn't look terribly refreshing. And Hawkeye jumps into the pool wearing a funny nose and glasses for no real good reason. which is just a funny little gag.
Well, I think the writers, like, especially, you know, Larry Gilbert, they came out of that generation where they were joke writers.
Yeah.
You know, they worked for, like, people like Milton Berle or, you know, whoever else was big at that time. And I feel like sometimes in these shows, and this goes for shows of that era, like All in the Family, they always feel a need to throw in silly gags like that just for no reason whatsoever. I guess just because they wanted people to remember that it's a comedy or a comedy drama or whatever.
Right. I mean, as you mentioned, the show's going to get kind of heavy in the second half. So, again, they're trying to balance it out a little bit. I should mention that final scene where Borelli is on the chopper pad and everyone is saying goodbye to him. And Hawkeye is noticeable in his absence. And then he finally does show up and waves goodbye to Borelli, tips his hat to Borelli, which indicates that he realizes he's probably a little hard on the guy. In syndication, that final scene is completely removed.
Yes, so I was going to mention.
Yeah, the episode ends with Borelli saying, "I wish you better luck on your third war." I'm like, so it's a much grimmer ending than they ever intended. The syndicator, again, just was like, we can lop that out.
It's much more downbeat.
Yep.
Because you figure that Borelli, you know, goes back to, you know, and they you know, there's a bad taste in both of their mouths.
Yeah.
Whereas that scene, and it's just so subtle, you know, Alan Alda doesn't come up to him and speechify. He's just standing there on the helipad. He kind of tips his hat to him, and Borelli kind of smiles and salutes back, and that's it. And, you know, you figure, okay, Hawkeye's acknowledging that he was wrong or that, like you said, he was hard on the guy, and Borelli's kind of saying, okay, you know, thanks, and he's leaving. But that kind of thing, you know, like I said, he didn't speechify. He didn't spend a minute going, you know, you were right and I was wrong. He just, okay,
yeah.
He acknowledged it with subtle acting, which I don't know if you see that in some of today's shows.
Yeah, you have to pay attention, you know? You have to lean in and make sure you're following what's going on. You can't be doing laundry while you're watching this. Again, I mentioned how everyone loves Borelli when he shows up. Everybody's very impressed. They do this whole run that Margaret apparently is attracted to him. And then there's a scene in the mess tent where Margaret is like making goo-goo eyes at him. And Frank Burns has a pretty extraordinary line where he says, if you keep drooling down your front, you'll have to change your bra. I'm like,
yeah,
that's a pretty out there line for Frank Burns.
And especially in 1975.
Yeah.
Today that line wouldn't even, you know, raise an eyebrow. But back then it was pretty, you know, pretty provocative. And the thing that I like about it is that, you know, Frank and Hot Lips or Margaret, they have to fawn all over him when he first arrives. But I guess he wasn't a general, so that's why, you know, Margaret didn't end up sleeping with him.
Yeah, probably so.
And let's face it, after what happened with General Kelly, you know, she, you know, it's probably just as well.
That's true. That's a good point. Maybe she learned her lesson or something. So my one frustration with this episode, I mean, again, I like shows where they talk about something specifically medical, about the arterial transplants, and that's something that the MASH units have never been able to do, and Borelli can introduce this to them, and I like that. The only frustration I have with it is that it turns so heavily into a Hawkeye episode because,
right,
you know, Borelli gets drunk and it becomes like Hawkeye versus Borelli when you're like, well, why wouldn't Trapper be just as upset? I know why they did it because Hawkeye was more and more taking control of the show and Alan Alda was becoming more of a creative force. But it's just kind of weird that Hawkeye is the one who's offended that Borelli is drunk, as if Trapper is sort of passive in that, which he would not be. And it's just kind of weird that all of a sudden Trapper is sort of sidelined and Hawkeye is the main protagonist here. And it's a little like, we don't need that. But I understand maybe there wasn't other things, no other lines to give a third character in the scene. But it just seems weird that after Trapper being there at the beginning, he just kind of gets shunted off to the side.
Well, yeah, I get that. And I think you're right. But I have to imagine that the writers or the producers wanted to play off the fact that Alan Alda and Robert Alda were father and son in real life.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder how much of their real life relationship informs that scene and that second to last scene in the swamp where, you know, Hawkeye's kind of digging into Borelli and Borelli is, you know, kind of telling his side of the story. Well, you know, father-son relationships can be very complex just in general. But here's a father and son who are actors in real life. And, you know, Robert Alda had a pretty good career, but let's be honest, I think Alan Alda became a much bigger star than he ever did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. He sort of, in terms of fame, really eclipsed his father. I mean, at a certain point, everyone knew who Alan Alda was. Yeah, absolutely the case.
You know, it stands to reason that they probably wanted to play off that because they could get some real drama out of it.
Right, and it's interesting to when you think about when Borelli comes back, it's even more adversarial. Like, they're on each other's throats practically in the second episode. So, yeah, maybe there is that little bit of tension. I thought I remembered that Alan Alda talked about that it was his father that literally dragged Alda on stage back when Robert Alda was doing vaudeville. Like, he brought little three-year-old, toe-headed Alan Alda on stage. As you know, to do like little child bits or whatever. So, I mean, he's literally the responsible for how he got his son into acting. One of the other actors in this episode is the British commander, who is the one who gives Hawkeye and Trapper the leg, where he talks about he's going to give him the arterial transplant. That actor is Joseph Maher. He was in a lot of things. He was in films like Time After Time, I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can, Under the Rainbow, Going Ape, which I remember my dad took me to when I was like 10 years old. The Charles Bronson film The Evil That Men Do, and he was in even in Tim Burton's Mars Attacks. He died in 1998. He's got kind of the, you know, classic British stiff upper lip thing, and he doesn't really understand why they're going to all this trouble just to save a leg, but nevertheless, he goes along with the plan.
I love that scene because he seems more preoccupied with his dinner,
mm-hmm.
you know, in his glass of wine, and, you know, these guys are on a mission. There's a sense of urgency for what they're doing because if they don't get the arterial segment back by a certain point, they won't be able to save the leg. And they're clearly like, you know, we're pressed for time, but he's like, he's just regaling them with these anecdotes about his dad having, you know, losing both his legs in the war. And, you know, he saved a lot of time not having to tie shoelaces.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet it's like, this guy is just totally clueless, but at the same time, it really adds, I think it adds to the show because there's nothing worse, you know, nothing worse than having a character with a sense of urgency being, you know, put off by this guy who's just, you know, it's like, oh, it's okay. And he has a great line at the end where he says, oh, it's definitely grisly and quite correct.
Yeah. Yeah, but eventually he's like, okay, guys, you know, I don't really understand it, but go right ahead. You can go ahead and do it. So, yeah. Yeah, it's you like to throw obstacles in front of your characters. And, I mean, there's even the you know, a horrible joke where Trapper has to pull over to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
To slow things down, and then a bomb goes off, and he just gives that up, and they go right back in the Jeep and go and get the transplant. So yeah, they come back, and they do Radar is the one who has to break it to Hawkeye. He says, "You better come," and he goes in and he sees that Borelli.
Oh, yeah.
And what you mentioned earlier about how you have to kind of really pay attention. And the scene where Borelli, they establish that Borelli is drunk. There's no dialogue to that effect. They just do a zoom in, a very subtle zoom in of Borelli sitting there, and you have to sort of infer that he's not capable of performing the surgery. And it's really, really underplayed. I mean, you should be. It means you're a bad actor if you're overdoing it. But it's not like Robert Alda's doing like a Foster Brooks thing where he's sloshing all over the place. He's just sitting there very still. In fact, he's kind of doing that drunk thing that when you're drunk, you're trying to pretend that you're not drunk. So you're overdoing it, and you can tell he's just sitting there. And I like that moment. I mean, when I was a kid and I watched this episode, I didn't fully understand that he was drunk because it was so subtle.
Right. Well, I think they're trying to show the poignancy of what Borelli was going through. And this is the first instance, I think, of on MASH where they actually show a surgeon, not one of the regular surgeons, having a kind of adverse reaction to the hustle and bustle, I guess, of the 4077.
Right, the bomb's going off, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's not the first. In a few seasons down the road, we'll see an even more pronounced version of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they're trying to show that – I think if they had him do, like you said, a Foster Brooks thing where he's just going, I'll help you operate, Hawkeye, mm-hmm. it would have downplayed the message and it wouldn't have been as effective.
Right.
You know, he's kind of paralyzed. Like, he can't deal with this trauma, and perhaps he was reminded of something that happened, you know, in the previous war or the war before that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all these characters come into the 4077, and especially the surgeons, like, they kind of have to blow past how frightening it would be to operate literally or figuratively in this scenario where there were bombs going off right around where you're staying. And the Hawkeye will have a speech to that effect in the interview next season.
Yeah.
And they'll get it into other episodes. But, I mean, yeah, it's like I imagine it could really throw your nerves off. And if you have access to liquor uncontrolled, you know, you can just – there's a still, then yeah, you might go down this road, and that's what Borelli does. And so, again, it's a really nice moment, and it's a good showcase for the two actors. And then, of course, they get into that Hawkeye is an exceptional surgeon and that he's able to perform the surgery even though he's never seen it. And I like Alan Alda's read on that line where he's like, I've never done it before. I've never seen it done. Like, he's that at sea with this idea that he's – I mean, can you imagine? I mean, think about how terrifying it is for any of us to do something you've never done before. Imagine performing – doing some form of surgery that could cost a man's leg and you've never done it before. I mean,
yeah.
Good Lord, the pressure you've put you're under at that point.
Yeah, no matter how good you are, and Hawkeye's obviously very good, he's not a seasoned veteran, you know, so to speak, like Borelli. He's, you know, I mean, I'm guessing, you know, based on things I've read, that he was probably just out of residency when he got called to duty,
right.
Or you know, had only been in residency for maybe a year or two. So he's got to be, you know, in his early to mid 30s, whereas Borelli is probably, you know, 50s or 60s or whatever. He's seen a lot more action. And like I said, as good as he is, you're right. Yeah, you're going to have to do something that's never been done before that you've never up till this point had never even heard of.
Yeah.
You know, what did Henry say? You know, that's kind of foreign to us. But then again, clean sheets would be foreign to us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I like that you see so many people watching it because they're just fascinated. Like they're never get to see this before. You know, I mean, this is something amazing. And, you know, again, even Frank is there, which is nice. Like, you know, like I could see him kind of being like, I don't care about this, but everybody's paying rapt attention to this. And they talk about how they get into the details of it. Like I've mentioned in previous episodes how for some sequences, they really allow certain things to build and not cut away. And like they really go through the paces of this scene. And they even talk about the foot is getting pink and warming up. Like they're explaining like what it would how this procedure would work and how it would happen. Like you would see that immediately blood is pumping and it's working.
Yep.
And so overall, for laymen, for people who don't understand at all what this is, they actually make it pretty clear. Like, oh, okay, I understand how this graft would work. It's a great little piece of verisimilitude.
Well, they had a medical consultant on the show, a doctor by the name of Walter Deschel.
Right, Dr. Deschel, yep.
And I saw an interview with him one time where he had consulted on MASH and other shows, and he said on most shows they would just ask about the technique of what they were doing, like how they should hold the scalpel. Or on MASH, the actors would ask him, what is the surgeon going through when this is happening?
Mm-hmm.
What are they thinking? How are they feeling? And I guess that was quite a contrast to, you know, okay, do I stand this way? How do I, you know, they wanted to be technically precise, whereas they were more interested in the interior dialogue of the characters or what was, you know, going through their heads.
Right. Do I ask for a clamp or stuff like that? Instead, it's more like, yeah, how would this doctor react to going through this scene? So, yeah, and then so the big scene is the confrontation between the two of them. And he says, this place got to me and I wanted to get in the game before how rough the game could be. And again, Hawkeye is pretty unrelenting, even while he's drinking a martini.
I mean,
you know, and he says, not to your degree. And then they said, Borelli's got the zinger. What are you leaning on? A bubblegum machine? And,
I love
you
that.
Know, yeah, it's and you know, and then they hold on Hawkeye. They hold on him, and Borelli even says you've got a great many gifts, Doctor. It's pity you can't number compassion among them,
yep.
Which is like, you know,
oh, yeah.
Like,
he gets the final word. Yeah. The other thing I like too is going back a little bit. I love when he tells him, you know, the place got to me because please don't confuse my explanation for an apology.
Right.
He's not trying to justify himself to Hawkeye. He's just telling him what he was going through. You know, he doesn't – and I think, you know, from his perspective, he doesn't feel he gets to apologize to this young snot.
Right. Right.
You know, he's just saying, hey, I've been through this twice before. I've seen this and, you know, this is what happened. And right, he digs right into him. He lets him have it. He doesn't let him off the hook. And, you know, Hawkeye, you can tell he doesn't – you know, as we've seen in previous episodes and we'll see probably even more so in seasons to come – Hawkeye doesn't like it when people call him on things.
Mm-hmm. And said this episode comes only a few episodes after the Alcoholics Unanimous show where they confront drinking. So I mean, it's like this is an ongoing issue, and it will be throughout the show. I mean, Hawkeye will get drunk in later episodes and cause problems. So this is something I like that they don't, quote unquote, fix it. You know, it's like, okay, right. I mean, Hawkeye learns a little bit here, but he's still going to drink. He's still going to drink too much occasionally. So, but at least he's a better understanding of how it can get out of hand for some people.
Well, years ago, I was talking with a friend about this, and she said something interesting that I thought about. Like, how many times did the casualties arrive when they were in the midst of having a few drinks in the swamp?
Right, right.
Whether it be Hawkeye and Trapper or Hawkeye and BJ, doesn't matter. And you have to wonder, like, how many times did they go into surgery where they may have been in a compromised position, in terms of, because, like you said, how many times have, they've been incoming wounded and they have to put their drinks aside and go in and operate?
Yeah, yeah. They have to – I've said on virtually probably every episode of the show, how was anybody at the 477th able to get plastered the way they did because wounded could arrive at any moment? They just said they kind of just blew by that on the show because you can't worry about that too much when there's only four doctors to play for. I think real MASH units had way more than four doctors. So when some people were off duty, they were off duty. But because the show can only have so many characters, nobody's ever really off duty. So there's a couple other things I just wanted to mention before we get to our favorite lines. I mentioned this episode was written by Robert Klein. This is his last episode for MASH. He wrote a bunch of first season episodes, and this is the last time he would work on the show. There is some stock footage of Tokyo when Hawkeye and Trapper arrive, and we see some 1970s cars there. So this is obviously it was more recently shot footage. Actor wise, the actor playing the bartender that serves them the different drinks is Tad Harino. He was on one previous episode of MASH. He played one of the Kim Lux in Officer of the Day from this season. And then there is one line that I want to mention that is an unfortunate one and just has not aged well at all, is when Borelli arrives and they say to him, are you going to get in trouble that you basically left your post? And he says, I'm an honorary major. What are they going to do? Bust me down from a mister down to a miss. And that line just doesn't – even as a kid, I was like – no, that's line just very casual sexism. We're like, no, that line, that one doesn't hold up.
Well, I have to admit, when I was younger, I probably didn't think about that line, to be honest with you. I don't think I particularly thought it was like a particularly funny line. But now, as I'm older, I hear what you're saying, and I kind of go, yeah, it was kind of a sexist line. But it was, unfortunately, it was the 70s and,
in the 50s. It's reflective of the attitude, certainly.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's one of those lines that just later on you go, oh yeah, okay, all right, we'll just blow past that. So again, in terms of, let's get into favorite lines. We just talked about a bad line. Let's talk about our favorite lines. Do you have a particular favorite line or joke from this episode?
Well, actually, I wrote like notes for this.
Okay.
One of my favorite lines is in the opening when they're going off to Tokyo and Henry Blake says to Trapper, shake your tail, and Hawkeye goes, not in front of radar. because they always treat him like he's their son.
Yeah. Exactly.
Our son Radar, we found him cold and scary. The other one, he says, "Bring something back from Korea." No, we're gonna be careful this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think about it, like, those two, yeah. But of course, he also says, that there's. I love how they're very adamant about the fact that they make no bones about the fact that they're not going to the lecture and that they're just there to have fun and debauchery. And they go, well, we don't want to disappoint the geishas.
Yeah, right. They don't even pretend that they're going. Yeah.
No, they don't even like make any pretense, to the thing. And they obviously reference that when they meet Dr. Borelli. Oh, you're not coming to the lecture? Of course not.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you. You're going to have to look back to seeing us because we're not going to go there. My favorite line is when Borelli arrives and Henry mentions that the 477th has treated almost 5,000 patients in less than 2 months. And I love Borelli is amazed at that number. And Hawkeye adds, well, I had help, of course.
Yes, that's a great line.
And Draper gives him a look of like, you dick.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's that look of somebody who you've been who you've lived with for a long time and you know them and they're like, oh, here they go again.
Yeah. It's a great, I mean, that Hawkeye almost slightly does feel that way about himself sometimes, that he's the main guy, but I love that line. It just makes me laugh so hard. So it's just fantastic. So, I think that's going to do it for the consultant. Do you have anything else you want to say about it before we wrap up, Chris?
Well, I wanted to make a reference to the fact that there is a repeat of a line from a previous episode, or a kind of a variation on it. I think Hawkeye goes, I loved a girl in San Francisco once. No, twice. And I think Trapper said a similar line in a previous episode.
He does say in Adam's Rib, he talks about the one-night stand he had with Mildred Feeney, and he goes, no, I think it was a two-night. Maybe it was a three. So they have a similar riff there of like, you know, oh, it's a one-night stand. Oh, no, well, maybe it was a little more than that. So, yeah, it's a similar – it's not the exact same joke, but it's the similar format basically.
Right. And there's another great line. It's just a throwaway one-liner where Frank Burns sees Hawkeye and Trapper. He goes, degenerates. And he goes – and I think it was Trapper goes, you peaked.
Burns gets a couple of really good – dings aimed at him in this episode, and there'll be one that ends this episode that's really, really funny too. He's just completely, you know, he's trying to suck up to Borelli, and you know, obviously Hawkeye, and I even love the way that when he's introducing the two of them, Margaret and Frank to Borelli, and he's like, "This is Major Houlihan," and you hear Frank go like, and Henry just goes, "Oh yeah, that's Major Burns." Like he just says it this kind of offhanded, like, "Yeah, whatever, who cares?" Well, I think that is going to do it for the consultant. So, Chris, thank you so much for stopping by the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I hope we can do this again at some point.
We got a lot more seasons to cover, so
that's right.
They're coming. So, of course, everybody, if you want to follow the show, you can find all the back episodes on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477CAST. And you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FWPodcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Adam Sanders, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, and Suzanne Holland for their support of MASHcast. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that is all.
Dr. Brilli, this is our chief nurse, Major Margaret Houlihan.
Major?
Sir.
Oh, that's Major Burns.
Major?
Honorary. I'm a doctor, not really a major.
Perfect. Frank's a major, is not really a doctor.